Welcome to the Bath Institute for Rheumatic Diseases Information Podcasts. I'm Mel Brook. I'm the Patient and Public Engagement Programme Director for BIRD. This podcast is part two of two, and during this second episode, I continue talking with expert guest Ben Davis, who is an advanced practice physiotherapist at the Royal National Hospital for Rheumatic Diseases in Bath. Ben specialises in persistent pain, and he's sharing some information and simple approaches that could help people who suffer with persistent pain. If you haven't listened to part one, I recommend that you do so before playing this episode. Just an extra note before we start, we did have some issue with the audio recording sound on this podcast. We've done our best to fix it and the content is still highly valuable, but you may need to adjust your volume controls on whatever listening device you're using. We apologise for this, but hopefully it's not going to spoil your listening experience.
Having worked here now in RHRD, RUH, for 18 months, it's been great working with the medics here and the clinical nurse specialists. I think I feel like I sort of sit in a bit of a confluence. There's the we need to look small at you. We need to appropriately look at your inflammatory markers, to x-ray your hands, to look at whether you've got certain genes or certain other disease indicators. And micro-treat them with drugs and biologics or steroids. Those things are absolutely important. They may just not be the only thing that we need to do. So we've got to, at the same time, kind of look small, make sure nothing's changed with disease management or some other disease is showing itself, some other problem showing itself. We've kind of got to also look big picture.
Yeah.
And the person is often the best person to do that, but they sometimes need some help. They need a bit of guidance to know that where to seek help about stress or what does well-being mean? What does self-care mean? Talking therapy to support people who've had trauma in their lives. We know that people who've had trauma quite a bit more likely to experience persistent pain of any cause. Haven't had trauma, and trauma can be one-off traumas like car accidents or muggings or situations of violence, but it can be ongoing trauma like levels of deprivation as a kid or bullying as a kid or young adult experiences. Those sort of traumas that carry on, they're not one-offs. Those things all tend to make the system a little bit more sensitive to detection. So those things don't always get brought up in clinic.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people acknowledge that now. It's certainly an acknowledgement on our part for trying to put together podcasts that are now as much about well-being in a general sense, things that can help you in a general sense and help maybe your self-management, as well as just telling you about the disease and telling you what medications are available.
I think the other side of that sort of flare-up question, when things have got worse, can you work out what has gone on, whether that's physical, emotional contributions, but also when life gets better, when pain improves, when quality of life seems to have improved consistently, well, what were you doing then? I think is another question. What were you exercising differently? Were you taking medications, appropriate medication regularly? Were you finding time in a busy life to have some meditation time, relaxation time? Were you more creative with art, writing, music, poetry? Did you have social groups, choirs, book groups, the guys down the pub, the walking football team? Did you have more? So, because essentially, if you can do less of the stuff that makes pain flare and you can do more of the stuff that makes pain calm down, well, do that.
Absolutely. I mean, we're kind of touching on the flow state, aren't we, really? Personally, I love to create things. I like to paint. There's things I do that take me away from maybe a bad flare-up. I call it my distraction technique, but it's really because I'm taking my brain into a different state. And this is kind of what we're talking about here, isn't it? With the, especially with chronic pain, obviously we were talking about acute pain earlier on, but with these diseases, you want to dial it down as much as possible because it is chronic and there's only a certain amount of pain the medications will take away.
Yeah, and the mood, there's two images that always come to my head with what you were saying. One is, so if I say the brain, this, again, like I'll just really emphasize this, this doesn't mean it's made up or imagined in any way, but Mel, if I did a brainectomy on you, if we removed your brain, you would have no pain, you know, so brains are pretty important. But the brain, the thing of the brain is a bit like an orchestra, you know, think of any big proms orchestra, all those different parts of the brain as part of the orchestra, and an orchestra can play any different composer in any different key. They can speed it up, they can slow it down. There's an orchestra hasn't yet run out of things to play. If an orchestra plays the same tune over and over again, they get really, really good at playing the pain tune, if we call it the pain. If they get, that orchestra only plays the pain tune, it gets good at playing the pain tune. It gets less good at playing the having a good time with my friends tune, the creating art tune, the remembering really good times with family tune. So we want your brain to stay really variable in everything it can do. And one of those, one of the worst things for pain and stuff is to always over-attend to it. We don't want you to ignore it. That doesn't always help either, but it's kind of, if someone's checking in with their pain all the time, it's checking in, how is it? Or how is it? Oh, I won't do that. Yeah, I'll let that settle a bit more. You know, that sort of makes the attention to the pain tune get higher and higher. But can you get your brain, what you've described as getting your brain playing the creative tune, the art tune, hanging out with friends tune, coming to work tune? You know, you're doing lots of different things. So that's really good at keeping the brain essentially flexible and malleable and not getting certain pathways sort of ground into it. The other image, I draw a small circle, black circle, that's pain. And a little bit of a bigger circle around the outside, that's life. Now, if you draw that, if you sort of repeat that, but you make the outer circle bigger each time, the circle in the middle, the pain circle, the black circle, stays the same size, but the outer circle gets bigger. If life is bigger, pain has to be a smaller proportion of that life. You know, if there's pain and there's a little bit around the outside of it, because, you know, for whatever reasons, and life is complicated, isn't it? There isn't much else in life, then pain is going to feel probably much more intrusive and impactful on quality of life than if pain stays the same size, but life gets bigger. And that might be, you know, what makes a life big? Well, like you just said, it's hobbies, it's activities, social life, it's time with family, it's time with friends. Yeah, that grows your life. And it may not change that number out of 10 that you say. Is it still 3 out of 10, 6 out of 10? Maybe it is. But there's a whole lot of other life going on with the 3 out of 10. I'd like to think that probably equates to better quality of life. I'd like to think that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it does. And again, it's not always easy. We know that achieving some of this is not always straightforward for someone. They could be locked in a louder pain cycle or a louder pain pathway, but it's worth knowing.
It's a bit like, there's some fantastic people on the internet, on Twitter. There's a lady called Louise Trewern, who's real patient advocate, which is a person like myself, who's really worked over, you know, many, many years to reduce her opiate dosages and improve her quality of life. You know, none of these things, unfortunately, are quick. But if you think of, again, there's another cycling sort of metaphor. British cycling had this phrase, marginal gains. You make a marginal gain. So if you're on a Tour de France, but you've got your mattress and your pillow, you sleep that little bit better, you know, you'll perform that little bit better. And these elite races are won by fractions of a second. So for life, you know, yeah, maybe a change of pillow is one thing. Maybe reconnecting with one old friend is another 1%. Maybe getting to that book group is another 1%. Maybe a change of diet is another 1%. But those things add up. There probably isn't anything that's No, there are some things, aren't there, that are radical. If someone has newly diagnosed atrial spondyloarthritis and they're appropriate for biologics, those biologics work. Those are the situations we know actually that drugs make a huge difference to people's quality of life in the main. We know that isn't, unfortunately, 100% certain. But let's imagine that sort of medication options are established and stable and there aren't medication options, all those other things. Do they just add, 1 or 2%? If you can get 3 or 4 things back in your life, you could be 6 to 8%, somewhat better. That's unfair. So marginal gains. There's nothing maybe that's going to be like fixing the problem, because these problems we all know are not simple, but cumulatively additional, they'll make a difference.
Absolutely. And we talked about the meds maybe not being the full solution, but they can help in other ways as well. It's not just what they do in your body, but also because they give you hope that this condition's not going to get any worse, that you're not going to get any more pain, that you're not damaged, maybe be as disabled as you thought you might be. So they give you hope, and hope's a really important emotion.
And I am not a clinician to advise people on drugs, but whether it's biologics or the DMARD drugs or the use of anti-inflammatories, sensible use of analgesia, I think it's, to me, that's just recognizing that almost none of those drugs are perfect. They all have some degree of side effect. And people listening to this will be working with their clinicians, their prescribing clinicians, GPs, rheumatology consultants, and medics, specialist nurses, to optimize that. And that's absolutely critical to get that right to an optimum.
It's all part of this picture of understanding the nuances of pain, isn't it? And understanding the relation of pain between what's going on physiologically and then what's going on in terms of your mood because of things going on around you. Or maybe you mentioned about the things that we're doing that are causing extra pain. We might not be doing the best for ourselves if we're overdoing it with things like gardening or whatever activity, running when we've got pain and we're just exacerbating it.
I used to work with a Scottish psychologist called Trish, and Trish would always say, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got.
Yes.
And I think I've always liked that phrase. It's quite simple. And it really just suggests, stuff has to change. Yeah, if you're someone who is, I've always just like, I've always just done the garden, I've always just like blitzed the house, and then you're in bed for 3 days. As a clinician, the other side of that sort of conversation, I might be kind of going, do you have to do it in a day? Do you have to blitz that? Or whatever. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. Don't complain about being in a pain flare if you've driven yourself, pushed yourself that hard. There's another phrase Trish would say, which is you can't fill from an empty cup.
We
And I
have to
think
adapt, don't we? We just have to adapt.
what that really talks back to is that idea of self-care, that over the years, I've seen many people who, are working, and they're parents, or they're caring for their aging parents. And it's sometimes when we talk about self-care, you've got to have time for relaxation, you've got to have time for your own stretches, you've got to have time to stress manage, whatever it might be. People understandably say, "Well, I haven't got time." I think it's finding that balance between, obviously, we are not suggesting you be selfish, put yourself top of the list, everyone else comes second. But we're also saying if you're 20th on your list, you're probably not going to be as used to family, friends, work colleagues as you could be. And again, I think it's just finding that balance, isn't it, Mel? I'm sure you have times when work is really busy, and maybe work over or get an event on or get a something like this, and then you have to back off slightly. You've got to be able to look after yourself in order to, I've got to look after myself in order to, come to work 39, 40 hours a week.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. But I've also been in that position where you can't take that break, and as much as you want to, there's so much going on and so many responsibilities you have to carry out. I'm talking in particular relation to being caring, and you do suffer. I personally suffered just sort of afterwards. You keep going, and then you do that big flare up after the event sort of thing. So yes, in an ideal situation, you would always try to make sure that you've got a bit of room for your self-care, but I do fully relate to the scenario where you just cannot catch a break, because catching a break is actually just going to bed.
Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it? It's really tough. But it's worth understanding.
It isn't easy. And I think all we as clinicians often ask of people is, are you being as kind to yourself as possible? But yes, absolutely. Sometimes life throws you curveballs, doesn't it? And you do have to deal with them.
Yeah. And typically it'll throw you several at once. And yeah, that's a whole other conversation. So Ben, there was a really good video that you recommended at the Rheumatology Research Day. Can you tell us about that? I know when I watched it, and I've watched it again since, because I know we were going to talk about it, that, do you know, it actually made me a bit emotional.
There's a video by a health psychologist, Professor Tamar Pincus, who's I think still based in Holloway in London. And you'll put the link in the show notes, won't you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And Tamar uses this really nice, very visual imagery of a ball of orange plasticine. And she said, this is me as a mum, me as a teacher, bright orange. She says, then pain comes along. A little bit of blue plasticine stuck onto the outside of the orange plasticine. So I take this to my doctor and I say, doctor, please, can you take this pain away? And they do. They can just pluck it off. And that's so... stepping away from describing the video, that's a really good sort of visual analogy of what is acute pain when something's happened. You've broken your arm, you've burst your appendix, you've sprained your ankle. You know, you come and see a clinician of some kind, and we often have fixes for those things. We give you appropriate treatment, you know, and pain can be got rid of. And that's great. And she goes back to, here we go, I'm back to my orange ball of bright orange plasticine. But then she carries the story on and she says, but pain comes back. She puts this blue lump. And she says, and this pain sort of stays. And she squashes the blue plasticine through the orange plasticine. She says, this is life happening. I've always really liked that little phrase. This is life happening. And of course, as you'll know, the orange ball of plasticine becomes a kind of dirty brown colour, becomes a kind of smudge, not so bright, not so vibrant. And she says, now, this is me with pain. I'm not as bright as I was. It's affecting my life, my work, my family. And I say to the doctor, can you take this away? Now, we know that we can't just unsmudge the plasticine. So we've got a problem there. We can't just remove persistent pain. We can't just sort of chop it out of you, unfortunately. So we have a bit of a problem. But Tamar carries on the video. She says, so I focus my attention on the bits that make me me. The bits of me, and she's getting bits of bright orange plasticine again. I'm pushing it in, smudging it. The bits of me that make me a teacher, make me a mum, make me a partner, make me a friend. And again, she's always smudging through this bright orange plasticine into the sort of slightly duller brown lump that she ended up with. And at the end, she says, you know, look, this is me now. I'm not as bright as I was. So having a persistent pain problem perhaps does take the edges off you in a certain way to some degree. But I'm brighter than I was and bigger. So that's, again, it's just a visual way of that idea of getting as much in life as possible. But you haven't got rid of the pain, but you've grown life to be the optimum that it can be.
Mm.
I've often used that, directed patients to that video and asked them to think, look, you know, you've come to me in a pain clinic and you've had surgeries for your back pain. You've had injections for your back pain. You've had, you know, a whole raft of drugs and whatever it might be. What we haven't done is cure the problem. We haven't been able to just kind of pluck that little blue bit of plasticine out. We now have a different problem. We've got this sort of persistent pain where maybe the orchestra has played the pain tune over and over again for months, years, decades even. We need a different sort of approach to that. And growing your life, self-care, sensible medication without excessive side effects, working to, you know, re-engage in life, the stuff that's important to you as much as possible in a very graded, gradual way. This might need to be the new approach.
Yeah, it made a massive impact in other ways as well to me, because it was always like the journey that you go through when you begin the life with chronic pain condition. So it was that initial, please take it away, learning that actually it's there and you can't get rid of all of it at once, and building your life to a point of acceptance. I think that's an emotional journey that people go through. It's like the grief cycle, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. So what's the word? Anger and disagreement and all those phases of grief, denial. No, I haven't got that diagnosis. You deny it, but then the cycle brings you around to accepting. And I think I always think about it as working with a diagnosis, working with pain, rather than sort of headbutting it and trying to beat it into submission. Unfortunately, I suppose lots of the approaches, particularly opiate drug approaches, they do work for some people, but they do have lots of consequences for many people. We can't always just beat pain into submission. We sort of have to dance with it and be creative with it, whether that's pain or whether that's a disease diagnosis. You've got to be flexible in all sorts of ways, both body, emotionally flexible, behaviorally flexible. How you think about things might need a bit of flexibility.
Totally agree. And we're going to have those bad days where it's harder to turn the volume down on the pain message. And there's maybe those are days when we can do something different.
Yeah, I guess your personal knowledge, your individual's personal knowledge, that those bad days don't last. They do improve. Are there things that you can do to improve them quicker, or reduce the severity? And when it does reduce and flares do begin to calm, okay, which bits of my life do I get back again? How do I get back to where I was? Back to the activities and the life quality things, as I'm able to.
Yeah, I agree. It's really interesting, Ben. Thank you so much to talk through, to have a discussion about pain, and I think is a bit different in itself from just talking about medicating the condition to take the pain away. I think it's just really interesting to understand all of that psychosocial
Yeah.
function.
Just one point I suppose I'd also like to make. People listening to this may well have a diagnosis of a long-term condition, whether that's something inflammatory like RA or PSA or axSpA, maybe something non-inflammatory like fibromyalgia. I think it's really important that, pains change, fluctuate, new pains appear, that there's that balance of not everything is due to that label that you may have. It is possible across life course that diseases change, or you acquire something new, or actually, you are having a heart attack, and that needs medical management. So I think this is a point just to ask people who are listening to not be afraid to advocate for yourselves when things are not what you're used to, whether that's with rheumatologists, whether that's with GPs. I kind of want you. I'm sure everybody is, an expert in your presentation, and you may well have a flare and you go, this is familiar, I've had this before, I know why it's happened. My history suggests it will probably calm down in a couple of days. I've got these strategies that I can put in place. But you'll also have time, perhaps, when you think, this isn't usual, this isn't normal, this is lasting longer than I'd expect. Just because you have a condition that's associated with long-term pain doesn't mean all pain is to do with that condition.
Absolutely.
So, sort of, I don't mean to be bolshy, but be a little bit demonstrative at times. Make sure that the clinician you're working with, talking with, GP, whoever it might be, just make sure that you've been able to articulate the difference that you're experiencing. And if you've got concerns about what that might be, articulate those concerns, and then it may be that the clinician says, no, for these reasons, we don't need to worry about that. Actually, let's investigate this, redo bloods, or whatever it might be. Not everything is to do with the condition, the label that you may have had applied, many, many years ago.
Listen to your pain is what you're saying.
Yeah, just know yourself, I suppose. Know yourself. Know what's unusual for you, and also recognize when something isn't.
That does come with experience as well, doesn't it? I think at the beginning of anyone's sort of experience of having one of these diseases is after the initial relief of the diagnosis that tells you that's what that is causing that pain. It takes time to get used to how your body cycles through living with chronic pain. So it comes with experience. I can only say that to anybody who's listening who might be fairly newly diagnosed, as you'll start to learn that differentiation between what is your regular pain, if you like, versus what is your not normal pain.
Yeah.
And that will be the flag to go and ask for the extra help.
I agree.
Thanks, Ben. So thinking on everything that we've talked about so far, what would you suggest people consider going forward?
So what I ask people to think about, something called dysentesville, they feel their pain is absolutely well managed and it doesn't impact hugely on their life. And that's great. Carry on doing whatever you're doing. If you're sort of thinking pain is not so optimum, you know, it is impacting on life, then what do you need to consider? I'd ask you to pull back a little bit. If you think of yourselves as there's three areas we talked about, and then add a fourth. First area is physical. You know, is there some exercise to help you be strong enough, fit enough, mobile enough to lead the life you want to lead? Can one of those, do any one of those things need to be challenged? If you're feeling that fitness is an issue, you need to get that part. If you think strength is an issue, you need to work against resistance. If stiffness is an issue, you need to do some stretches. There you go, there's a physiotherapy degree for you. The second area is that emotional world. You know, if you look at yourself, you think of yourself, and think, you know, worry is quite high, or low mood is quite significant, or stress, then there are lots of ways that people will intuitively know how to manage those things. But there are support offers around the country, your talking therapy services, available through GP, often available through self-referral, will run courses for things like well-being, courses for worry management, courses for sleep, you know, low-level sleep issues, courses for well-being, courses for creative outlets. Almost all GP practices around the country have a social prescriber. This links into the third bit, but they can prescribe or at least identify all the sort of social outlets that there are in your community. So is there an emotional world challenge that you can set yourself, or is there a social world? Is there a way of growing your social world, reconnecting with people, time outside the house, time with friends and family, time with people who care about you and love you, time with people who make you laugh? Can you optimize one of those things? The fourth is, are there drugs? You know, is there appropriate drug changes? And sometimes recognize that's actually drug reduction to reduce some of the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just leave that with people who prescribe and know you individually. There's a phrase increasingly used, sort of personalized medicine. What that means is, I'm not saying everybody listening to this must go and have talking therapy counseling. What it means is, what do you need? And sometimes you can sort of work that out yourself, and sometimes you do need a bit of guidance from somebody like an OT, a physio, a GP, specialist nurse, medic. You need a bit of guidance as to what's required and where to get that support.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're looking at that, I'm going to give you another video link that you can put in the show notes. I can't quite think who's put it together, but I know it's come from work done by Jackie Willumbo, who's an advanced practice physio in pain management, and her PhD in for self-management persistent pain. But they use this analogy of a plant growing, and the voiceover for this animation says, having a pain problem is like finding a plant, a house plant, but you don't know what that plant needs. Does it need bright light or sheltered light? Does it need to be outside or inside? Does it need lots of watering or very occasional watering? As you go through looking after that plant, sometimes you'll get it wrong. And self-care and personalized medicine is kind of working out what do you need to grow your pain self-care plant to its optimum. So I'll send you that, Mel, and add it to the show notes. It's only a couple of minutes. All the videos I've mentioned, they're only short. But they're just quite different ways of thinking about it and perhaps even sharing with other people, of course, in your life, you know, your partner, your family. These things can always be useful to kind of articulate something that is really hard to put words to sometimes.
Yeah, and I totally agree. We'll put both of those in the show notes. And as you were talking, I was thinking, well, all of these things that are out there, you know, it can take a bit of a search around. I find a useful thing that helps me is to maybe start just with a blank piece of paper with me in the middle, and then try and sort of just doodle my way into figuring out where the bits that are lacking. And then that can take you on a pathway to maybe finding what might satisfy that part of you or help that part of you.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's just personally what works for me. We talked about social prescribing, for instance, and we've got a podcast on that if people are interested. I know that can help a lot of people. And the connection with other people who are going through what you're going through. So peer support, that's always been a really big part of my lived experience and just helps me to put in perspective where my pain is in the whole scheme of things within this specific disease.
Yeah.
I think you can get a lot of support from other people. That comes through with the AxSpA residential course as well, doesn't it? People always say it might have been the first time that they talked to someone else and it levels it for them. So those things are really important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. I will put as many links in our show notes as I can and to the videos as well. We'll try and get some slides or some things up on the BIRD website as well. So we'll let people know about that.
Great stuff.
Well, thank you so much. I think it's been really insightful to talk about understanding pain and the background of pain, what we know about it, and thinking about ways that we can perhaps affect our own experience of living with pain.
Well, I hope it's been useful. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for your time. And hopefully people who hear this in the future can, just maybe nudge themselves in a direction.
Thanks, Ben.
Pleasure.
Thank you to our expert guest today and to you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast and will listen in to all the other episodes in this series. BIRD are committed to helping patients increase knowledge about rheumatic conditions because we know this can have a really positive impact on living with them. We also have a great focus on enabling people to get involved in rheumatology research to help make sure that new medications and treatments meet the needs of patients. We couldn't do any of this without the help of our volunteers and the support of our donors and sponsors, all of whom we are immensely grateful to. You can sign up to be notified about all our podcasts and our patient engagement research opportunities by joining our mailing list. Just send an email to admin@birdbath.org.uk. The address and links are in the show notes.